And welcome to this edition of Recruitment in the Modern World. In this episode, we examine two interlocking processes in the recruitment process. The first process is that of onboarding, and the second process is that of induction. To discuss this, we have an expert, I'm delighted to say, an expert in HR, and someone who I've had the pleasure of working with professionally, and that person is Dawn Pike. So welcome, Dawn.
Hi, thanks, Anthony. Lovely welcome.
And Dawn, you're an HR consultant, and in fact, you've recently started your own consultancy. So go on, please let me invite you to just tell us a bit about the consultancy.
Yeah, great. Thank you. So my consultancy is called New Dawn HR, just launched at the start of this year. So it's a really, really exciting time for us and this consultancy. I mean, one of the things I absolutely love links so well to what we're discussing today, because I like to help organizations really put in place solid HR foundations, get their house in order.
Yes.
To be able to elevate the employee experience, because I think having those foundations in place really means that you can then focus on, okay, what is it that makes this a great place to work?
Yes.
So I'm personally very passionate about, as I think you can tell, about working with organizations to create places where people love to be. I think it's so important, not only for business success, but who doesn't want happy, fulfilled, healthy people in their workplace?
Absolutely. And we see it from the FJ Wilson perspective. There's a world of difference between the people who sort of go through the motions and the people that actually do more than tick the boxes and actually craft things, you know, for the people in concern. So that's music to our ears. Now, we originally planned to record this episode some while ago, and at that point, you were Director of People and Culture for International House London, who are one of FJ Wilson's clients. And although you've moved on now, you've chosen to leave that role and set up your own consultancy, you very kindly agreed to do the recording anyway. So that's much appreciated. Thank you.
Oh, great. It's fine.
So we focused the episode primarily on the case of a recruit which FJ Wilson actually helped found for you. And so we'll discuss how the onboarding and induction process worked. Before we get into the processes, could I invite you just to say a little bit for our listeners about what was the context? You know, what are we talking? What kind of role? What sort of process? What are we talking about here?
Yeah. I mean, well, I've worked with FJ Wilson for a number of years and on a variety of roles, and I think we've always had the same approach and ethos, which has been really great. I think great in terms of a recruitment manager experience, great in terms of that HR perspective, and of course, getting the right person into the role. Now, given my sort of level in an organization, it's mostly been the director level role or certainly kind of senior head ofs that we've been looking for in quite niche environments, mainly in not-for-profit sort of education membership bodies. So there is often a bit of a balance to be had between making sure that you get that right person recruited whilst there are often some budgetary challenges potentially whilst you're working up against sort of commercial giants and things like that looking for the same people. So always those challenges. So you really have to sell the organization and their values and what they're all about to the candidates. Now in the most recent role, and this isn't sort of isolated to that particular organization, we had survived the pandemic, you know, finances were just about coming to a stable position. And actually we were looking for a senior finance person in that particular role. So it was absolutely essential that they were going to protect the organization in terms of those finances. But at the same time, we had big growth ambitions. And again, this comes through with a lot of not-for-profit organizations where they need to grow, they need to be innovative. So you need somebody who's commercially minded and perhaps even has that commercial background whilst they're going to be dedicated to our mission and vision. So there's all of these things to kind of balance. And again, in smaller organizations or sort of small to medium organizations, which is what I've worked on, you know, finance roles aren't necessarily just finance. And again, with this particular role, we had governance in there, we had IT in there. And another strand of our strategy, and again, this is really common now, was digital transformation. So, you know, it needs to be somebody that's not fazed by that broad remit. I think sometimes there's a little bit of a misunderstanding that in not-for-profit organizations, it's a bit cushy, but I can tell you it's certainly not. So they need to be able to be hands-on, and they needed to be able to build trust with people at all levels. That's really important. I think, again, in these small to medium organizations, senior people need to be visible, and they need to have that trust in every single person in the organization. So quite often very meaty roles, and, you know, at any point in time, it tends to be critical, business critical and strategically critical that you get the right person as well.
I remember discussing this role with you at the time, and I said how back in the 80s I was a school teacher, and it reminded me of how the sort of head teacher and the deputy head, like, they had to be seen around. People wanted to wanted to see them there, not just behind their desk in the office. You've touched on a couple of things before we go into the specifics of this appointment. A couple of general things, I think. One is a lot of the finance roles we now work on are finance plus other things. And you mentioned such things as, you know, technical change, for example. And that requires a different kind of search mechanism from a recruitment company. In other words, you know, searching for people who are have the financial experience and qualification is not so demanding, but actually then identifying people who have the additional bits, that sort of requires actually quite a lot of skilled search usually. The other thing you touched on was how the need for commerciality. And a lot of our clients are not-for-profits, and quite a few of them do need, for senior appointments, particularly people with commercial edge. And quite often they say that that's what they're looking for, but sometimes you find in practice they're a bit uneasy about appointing from outside the sector. And it was very noticeable with working with International House London. The organisation was, no, we do actually want people that have commercial understanding. So that made the job a little bit easier, I think. So let's move on then to specifically the process of onboarding. We've already done an episode where Fiona Wilson talked about the process of onboarding. Generally, it's one of our first episodes. And we're aware there are certain problems that tend to recur, not all the time, but they recur a bit more than one would wish. So let me just itemize those. One is there is a bit of a tendency for people to reduce the process, for the employer in particular, to reduce the process of onboarding so that it becomes merely sort of shunting documents, you know, like, we need you to sign this, we need you to read this, and so on. The second thing is that often the recruit loses touch with the hiring manager, so they might be dealing with someone in HR but not the actual person that was hiring them. And the third thing is often the emotional tone changes, because very often people are sort of delighted when they get offered a job, and often the employer is sort of delighted and relieved, like, oh, thank goodness we found someone. And then as the process drags on, it sort of goes from this sort of emotional positivity to one of what I would call just bureaucratic flatness, and the sort of energy ebbs out of things. So that's the sort of background. Now let's turn to this example then. So you're appointing a senior person, in this case we're talking about finance plus person. How did you go about that? What did you have to do? What did the recruit have to do in that process?
Yeah, I mean, I think even taking a step back from the onboarding, it's about, this is going to sound so basic, but it's about communication, and that starts, you know, even before you reach out to candidates or advertise for a role, is being really clear in your communication about what is going to happen, when it's going to happen. And you know, especially with a role at this level, because people are going to have busy diaries. Even when not working at this level, people have other commitments as well. You know, it might be childcare, or, you know, having to care for relatives, those kind of things. So having them know what's going to happen and when. I think even just in sort of your documentation is a really great starting point.
Yeah.
But I think for me personally, I'm a big fan of conversations, conversations as early as possible, even before a candidate applies. And right. that can be, you know, if you're a recruiter, I know that sort of tends to happen with the recruiter in the first instance.
Yeah.
But I myself, you know, always make myself available to FJ Wilson to say, you know, if somebody wants to reach out with me and find out just a little bit more about the context and the culture, particularly if it's a senior person within my team, then I'm sort of happy to be available to answer those questions. But of course, when you take an agency out of the mix, you know, you absolutely have to be that person at the forefront, you know, with any role as well as you're leading on the recruitment. So I think that helps to build the candidate connection. It does help as well, you know, just to make sure that you are getting the right people actually following through with their application, so that, you know, you're sort of more guaranteed to keep them engaged right till that end point that you're talking about.
Yes.
And it's exactly as you've touched upon. It's making sure that communication doesn't drop within the sort of stage from offer. Here's an offer. You kind of get that elation and excitement from both sides. And sometimes, you know, particularly with senior roles, it's going to be 3 months until they have a so it's a long, you know, it's a long old way. And that communication can start to break down. So I would always come back to what's going to happen and when. Now, with that particular role, we had, as I've already mentioned, there was sort of digital transformation ambitions, which meant that as a HR team, you know, we had our own digital transformation to be done as well.
Right.
So, again, the nature of the organization, we had a lot of new starter documentation to build in. And I have to confess, it was still all over email. So, the advantage with that particular role is I could talk to the person that we'd offered to, and I could say, look, you know, just a heads up, this isn't how we would be doing things in an ideal world. And also a little bit of introduction as to what their role was going to be.
Yes, that's right.
So that works quite nicely. But again, even just with a candidate at any level, it's just saying to them, giving them a call again, these are the documentations you can expect. This is what they mean. This is how you, you know, complete them. And then, you know, there are so many kind of little touches that you can do in that sort of interim period where you are letting candidates know what stage their documentation is at, particularly, you know, you've got your references, you've got your sort of proof of ID, you know, you might have DBS checks, things like that. They all come in at different stages. So I think telling them at each point in time when things are back, and then sending them or calling them actually in the first instance, followed up by an email to say, hey, great, we're there, we've done everything. And we can now confirm your start date. This is the date, this is the time, this is who you ask for. So there needs to be really close working there with the hiring manager and with HR, depending on who's leading on what bit of the process. But then again, you know, that close working with those two needs to continue so that when somebody comes in on their first day, as I say, they know who they're meeting. You might have them to have like a little coffee with the team. Making sure, so tiny things, so connecting with IT to make sure that their desk is set up, perhaps, you know, just putting a few little chocolates on their desk and a welcome card can make all of the difference. And I know we'll go on to induction, so I won't go into it too much, but I think, you know, being prepared for them just really helps people to feel welcomed and like, actually, you know, yes, I, you know, this is a team I want to be a part of. So I think it's absolutely critical. Actually, one thing I will just mention, I think this was something that happened with me in my role previous to International House, where I had a really long notice period and they were having a meeting on the engagement survey results had come out. So they invited me to come along to that meeting. Then, you know, they said, no pressure, you don't have to come. But in my notice period, they said it might be beneficial. You know, we don't expect you to even talk in the meeting, but just wise. And I thought that was a really nice touch. So that's something I keep an eye out for as well. Are there any critical meetings? It might be just helpful to invite people to, which isn't always possible if someone's working a notice period, but I personally found it really valuable, and it's a kind of no obligation thing. So so many little things that you can do to make that experience really smooth.
I think that's really nice. I mean, if they take you up on it, it means they get a feel for the place, don't they? And it makes the first morning a bit less daunting. And not everyone's looking at you thinking, who on earth are you then? You know. That's a nice touch. Is there anything else that you kind of expect from the recruit? I mean, you've given us a very good picture, I think, of what you aim to do as an employer. Is there anything particular that you would want the recruit to contribute, or is it simply a question of them, you know, doing the things that you want them to do, like filling in the paperwork?
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, it sounds quite basic, doesn't it? But communication goes two ways. So let's say if they had any concerns, you know, or, you know, if there was particular documentation that they wanted access to. So with senior level roles, that might be things like looking at the organizational strategy. I know with me personally, I'd always ask for the engagement results. But it is a little bit of a delicate balance, because you don't want to imply that they should be looking at these documentations. They'll be very busy sort of wrapping up with their notice period. But some people find it helpful. And I think, if you know, again, with senior roles, you've often got a broad remit. So if they want to get involved, get their feet under the table and start making change quite quickly. Yeah. So having those documents in advance is kind of reassuring for them. I think it mostly comes down to that. With the documentation as well, I mean, if there's anything they're struggling with or that's a bit confusing, that they just reach out and ask for a bit of support and guidance in completing that documentation. You know, HR, I'm sure, would always be, I can't speak for every organisation, but I'm sure they'd always be happy to help and wanting that smooth transition. But again, you know, communication goes two ways, isn't it? So I think keeping that contact with the hiring manager or the person that's going to be managing them is also really essential. And for them to ask them any key questions that they might have, again, to kind of put them at ease or give them context, because the hiring manager is best going to know the role at the end of the
Indeed,
day.
Indeed, yes. And so just to thank you, I mean, just to wrap up on the onboarding process, I mean, if you reflect on it, what would you say was the main positive there?
Yeah, I mean, I think with that particular process, it was the communication between sort of four different parties you're looking at. Because you're looking at the recruiter, you're looking at the candidate, you're looking at HR. In this particular instance, I was the sort of main contact for them in the organization. But you also had the CEO as well, who was their line man, who himself has a very busy diary. So sometimes, you know, you kind of have to take the lead and support, you know, all of those different people in making sure it is ultimately the best experience for the candidate. So I think that for me, it flowed, it was fluid, it was regular. And people were available as well, which when we've got busy diaries is difficult. But for me, I think that candidate stepping into the organisation for the first time is so important that has to be a priority. And I think everyone took it very seriously.
Yes, it's a classic bit of stakeholder management, genuine stakeholder management, isn't it? Now, when you say it flowed, it's interesting that when you were giving us an account of that, you actually quite naturally moved on to include some aspects of induction. And it strikes me, HR, in terms of sort of, you know, how they document processes and so on, will often make a strong distinction between onboarding and induction. But it strikes me that for the recruit, it doesn't necessarily feel like that. It's all part of one big flow, which is joining a new organization. So let's move on to induction, if I may. Again, we've already done one episode on induction. One of our early episodes, Fiona Wilson, our managing director, talked about induction generally. And I think we've identified, as with onboarding, there are certain typical pitfalls that people can fall into. One pitfall, I don't think any listener's going to be surprised to hear about this, is simply everything's less left to the last minute. It's all a bit of a scrabble. And, of course, sometimes worse than the last minute. So, you know, the recruit turns up and they say, well, we haven't set up your laptop properly yet. You know, well, why not? How am I supposed to do anything? I think sometimes it's just reduced to just like onboarding can be reduced to sort of tick box dealing with documents. Here it's often reduced to mere practicalities, like is the email address set up or isn't it, rather than thinking about softer things like the how much are we conveying the values of the organization, how much are we introducing the culture of the organization. And I think the third problem, and these problems all sort of obviously wrap up together, is there can be a lack of reciprocity where the HR person has a checklist of things they need to get done and things they need to cover and don't necessarily allow time for thinking, well, the empathy side, like, well, what's the recruit worried about? What might they want to be dealt with as part of that process? So let's have a look at this particular role then and the general process behind it. Again, my question is sort of, what happened? Who did what in the process of induction?
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. For me, they're two separate processes, of course, but they're actually just one process that's split into two parts, I guess. Kind of have to get to the end of the onboarding process to be able to move into the induction process. And it, as you sort of touched on, it's so important not just to limit that induction to somebody sat at a desk, whether it's in the office or virtual, tapping away, doing their job, and that's their role. It's really fundamental that they get a wider picture of the organization and where they fit within it. I mean, before I move on, I guess, to the sort of softer stuff, I think, and this isn't limited to roles that aren't senior. I think this goes right up to the most senior level roles. Their own role itself should be connected with the organizational strategic aims, but also the vision and the mission as well, because it helps them to see, okay, this is where my role fits in. This is the impact that I can have once I'm up and running and I'm successful. But it starts to sort of create that sense of belonging as well, which when it comes to the softer side of things, you know, when you feel you're making a difference, that really helps you to engage with the wider organization.
Yes.
And the people around you as well and what they're doing. So it's kind of a bit of a jigsaw, really, where you're all working towards this this one vision. I mean, the way in which to do that is so basic, but I think it's with the manager, of course, giving them the context of their role in those first few days, but also having smart probationary objectives as well. And I'm not suggesting in any way that you need a big unwieldy appraisal system, because I think the world is moving away from that. And personally, I think that's the right thing. But I do think the smart objectives, you know, as well as regular check-ins with the manager and the new starter, help to keep them on track. And I think it goes a long way to that. Again, it comes back to that new starter feeling a sense of belonging and feeling cared for, and that really valuable time spent with their manager, which, you know, it does need a bit more in the first few days, weeks, months even, to be able to kind of identify any developmental needs earlier, but also for reassurance as well. Am I doing okay? Am I on the right track? Is I need to change? So I think that's absolutely essential. And then, of course, you mentioned, I mean, that's kind of the nuts and bolts of the role. But then talking about organizational culture and values, I think it's so important, although I think managers find it challenging, and I can understand why, but it's so important to make sure that your values are incorporated, but you're sort of assessing your new starter against those values as well. So sort of thinking about behaviors and what behaviors do I expect to see. And that for me is the manager's responsibility, but it is absolutely HR's responsibility to be promoting the values in all of the materials and documentation, and hopefully a HR induction that goes around it as well. So they're not just hearing it from their manager, but they're hearing real live examples from across the organization.
Yes.
I mean, I have to say, it wasn't at IH actually, but one organisation I worked for, we were lucky enough to have an employee representatives group, and with sort of HR or our learning and development team, we did a board game which was all about our values. it wasn't us that ran it; it was the employee reps group that ran it, which was great because it introduced people to other people whilst talking about the values, and also, you know, connecting them with other new starters in similar positions as well. So that worked really, really nicely.
Yes.
And then it's making sure that you are, again, I think you spoke about proactivity and making sure that when somebody comes in on their first day, they know what's going to happen, not just on their first day, but sort of, you know, maybe over their first 2 weeks or even a month if it's a more detailed role. So what I would tend to do is have a schedule. And, it's a simple schedule where you've already plotted in key meetings with those people from across the organization for the new starter to, you know, I always suggest a coffee. I don't necessarily suggest something too formal, but they are, you know, getting to know the key people within the organization that are going to set them up for success. They know who to go for what information and when. And it doesn't have to be, you know, again, you don't have to be too prescriptive with it. I think it's up to that individual to decide what they want to get out of those meetings. But having them in the diary, obviously, you know, I always avoid having like four meetings in a day or And making sure that they're interspersed with any organisational wide meetings that are going on. At International House, we had a monthly staff meeting, so making sure they're invited to those as well. And, you know, moving on from that, the staff meeting, as HR, we would say to the person running it, these are our new starters. So if the CEO could do a welcome, you know, for them and introduce what their role is, that would be great. And there are other ways to do that as well. So we would also do welcomes via the newsletter or, you know, you might have a social media platform, and asking the individual to talk about, you know, they can put together a little summary of what their role is, what they hope to achieve, but then, you know, something a little bit personal, a hobby. Because then you get other people reaching out and going, oh, hey, you know, I love that too. So, you know, you're kind of connecting people on that professional level, but on a way which connects them on a social level as well. I think the other thing, the one last thing I would probably just touch upon, because of the world we're in right now, when it comes to making sure that people feel genuinely that sense of belonging, is hybrid working.
Right.
So I'm all for hybrid working. I think it's, you know, it's absolutely wonderful in the things that it can do for an organization and for individuals within it. But I think if you are a hybrid working organization, then a really nice welcome for a new starter, if you're asking them to come into the office on their first day, which again, I would recommend, is that the team are there as well. And you have maybe lunch planned and perhaps a meeting where each member of the team are talking about their own objectives as well. So, you know, and again, that can be coffee, you know, coffee and a cake, make it quite informal. So, and, you know, and again, you know, I'm talking about hybrid here, but there are that are all virtual. I think FJ Wilson is one,
indeed,
in fact. You'll know, you'll be better at this than I am, I think, but there are things, so many things you can do virtually that replicate that. So if you're sort of thinking, oh God, but we don't have an office, not a problem. You can do it virtually. But I think if you are hybrid working and that's the expectation, then for a new starter to walk in and maybe it's just them and their manager and one person isn't ideal. I think having the whole team there is just a really nice touch to help them feel settled, help them feel that they're going to have a smooth transition. And really, again, it's about setting them up for success.
Yes, and it's interesting. I mean, yes, we are, FJ Wilson has actually always been remote working. But what that means is it doesn't mean you don't think about these things. It means you have to give special attention to, well, you don't just want people to stumble across their colleagues one at a time with Zoom meetings, but actually, how do they get to meet people early on and understand each other's jobs virtually? So that's a really good overview of the processes involved. Thank you for that. Just as a way of wrapping that up, may I ask you just to reflect on it? And again, the same question about, you know, what were the positives? What did you particularly like or feel were the main outcomes of that process?
Yeah, I mean, I think for that particular role at International House, I mean, it was, I mean, that the person we were recruiting as a director was a peer of mine. So actually, whilst it was a little bit of a different process, because typically a lot of those things I was talking about, close connection again with HR and the hiring manager, but the manager is the person responsible for doing that induction process. But I really valued it. I was doing it sort of on behalf of the CEO, really. But because that person was my peer, it gave me an opportunity almost to be their buddy. Yeah. So it kind of, it worked really nicely. So I think, and actually, again, you know, this is something to think about if you're putting together an induction program, is to think about if you do have a key contact, who else can you involve in that induction process that will help the individual, as in the person already in the organization. Perhaps it might give them a development opportunity of their own.
Yes.
But also for the new starter coming in, they've got someone that they can go to, particularly if they have a really busy manager, just to kind of bat off ideas. Yes. And it worked both ways. You know, this was a senior finance person coming in. I'm not the strongest in terms of finances, so I was learning just as much from them as they were from
yes.
me.
Yes. And I can imagine that. It's the idea of being able to go to someone and say, you know, I don't really understand this bit, or I'm wondering whether I've got something wrong or something like that. And there's someone a bit outside the sort of the normal chain of command, as it were. So that's yes. that's very, so thank you. I think that's extremely helpful, extremely constructive account of both processes, the onboarding and the induction process. Let me ask you one thing to finish, Dawn. When I asked you to tell us about your consultancy, you very politely didn't turn it into a sales pitch. But let me at least offer you an opportunity. Obviously, we'd be very happy to put your contact details into the show notes. But how do people find out more about you and your work?
Yeah, great. Yeah, no, thanks, Anthony. I really appreciate that. I mean, I'm on LinkedIn, right. So that's probably the easiest place just to kind of have a little bit of a look at my background, have a look at the kind of organisations I've worked with. But also there's the sort of link to my website. Yeah. It's at newdawnhrconsultancy.com. Right. I mean, obviously you can go straight to the website as well to have a little bit of a look at what we're all about. But it really is, as you would have known, as I've mentioned, I've worked with small to medium organizations, and whether it's, you know, you have a single issue to resolve or actually looking to elevate the employee experience, I just really love partnering with organizations in sort of navigating all of those different complexities that HR can bring. And I think, in fact, one of the reasons that I sort of moved to the consultancy route is because in all of the organizations I've worked with, I've kind of started with these blank pieces of paper, I guess is what you would call them, and then worked with the organization I mentioned earlier, firstly to put those solid foundations in place. I'm probably quite rare in that I really love getting into the nitty-gritty of processes and sort of doing improvements and efficiencies. I love writing as well, whether it's policy or an investigation letter. So all of that stuff I really love. But where my true passion lies is, you know, digging in deeper, what gets beneath the skin of these people, what makes them tick, what drives people to really do a great job. And never has that been so important, I think, again, at coming out of the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of well-being issues that we need to be mindful of and considerate about. So, you know, really making sure that people are happy, healthy and fulfilled at work, as cheesy as it sounds. But going into lots of different organisations, I get to do that over and over again. Brilliant. Which is something I really love.
Well, I think we have some shared ground. I mean, Fiona and Wilson and I often say when we've been to a sort of HR event or a recruitment event, we do sometimes say, do these people realise that it's really about people? And I think that was very evident from working with you at International House London. So, Dawn, thank you ever so much. Really grateful. Thank you.
No, thank you. Very, very happy to be here.
This podcast is produced by Dr. Bart Hallmark. The music's by Harry Chalmers, and the podcast is published by FJ Wilson Talent Services. If you'd like to contact us about the services we offer recruitment services, we offer talent development services,
services to help you develop the talent you already have on your staff, and we also offer coaching to help develop individuals. If you'd like to contact us about our services, you're of course very welcome to, and the best way to do that is via our website, which has a very easy URL. It's simply all lowercase, fjwilson.com. That's all one word, fjwilson, fjwilson.com. Hope to hear from you. Thank you for listening.